Hey, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I am giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I'm joined by author Brighton Walsh. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Award-winning USA Today and Wall Street Journal bestselling author Brighton Walsh spent a decade as a professional photographer before taking her storytelling in a different direction and reconnecting with her first love, writing. She likes her books how she likes her tea, steamy and satisfying, and adores strong-willed heroines and the protective heroes who fall head over heels for them. Brighton lives in the Midwest with her real-life hero of a husband, her two kids, both taller than her, and her dog who thinks she's a queen. Her boy-filled house is the setting for dirty socks galore, frequent dance parties. Okay, so that's mostly her by herself while her children look on in horror, and more laughter than she thought possible. Well, welcome. And
Thank
before
you.
we talk the roommate rules, let's get to know you a little bit. So,
okay.
Photography was a career, and you moved back to writing, but why romance?
Because I am a romance girl at heart. Like I have always been. I like the security of knowing that there's a happy ending in there. I love love. I've always loved love. I'm a Libra.
Okay.
So that should tell you a little bit about my baseline here is just I'm a romantic at heart. So romance was just a natural path for me. Like I didn't even consider any other genres.
Now, were you a reader of it as well?
Yeah, so I was a reader fairly young. Like I started, you know, when I was in elementary, of course. And then I sort of got away from it and then came back to it. And then it was, you know, young adult romance. But I also did a lot of horror. I did Dean Koontz and Stephen King. And that was before like I became an adult and realized that, oh shit, this stuff can actually happen in real life. And so then I didn't like reading those things quite as much. And then I had, you know, I started my free photography. I started, you know, my adult life, got into the workforce, got married, and then had kids, had a kid. And then I started reading. I hadn't read for, you know, since probably, I don't know, 17 or 18. And then when I was 28, I was pregnant with my second child. And that was when I was a photographer and I was going to a retreat with some friends. And it was in Dallas and I had to go, I had to fly, obviously, to get there. And this was back when magazines were still like a big thing. So I was at Target and I could either buy a magazine for $6 or I could buy Twilight on sale for $5.99. And so I bought Twilight because a couple of the photographers were talking about Edward and how dreamy he was. And he was just so great. And I'm like, I don't believe you guys, but okay, I'll give it a go. And then I truly never looked back. Like I went from that and I read the entire series. Well, the first three books were out in a week. And then I went back and reread again. I shut the book and restarted. And that grew my obsession. I started writing fanfic. I wrote 500,000 words in fanfic, made it my personality for about 5 years. And that opened the world to like the big bad Romancelandia. And I have never left.
You know,
I've been here.
It's funny that you say you started with Twilight fanfic because you are not the only one. There is a whole,
I know,
there
is a full
slew
swath.
Of authors in the romance world that has started in Twilight fanfic.
And I knew, I would say probably 90% of them in the fandom. Like that's where we met, you know, online. Through the fandom, which is, it's really amazing. Like if you've ever been a part of a fandom, it has that, it's not unsimilar to Romancelandia, just because it's this community of people that almost feels like a family, but yet you still have fights within, within the ranks. But there is that just sort of baseline of understanding that's really lovely.
So what made you decide to publish your first book?
So I wrote, like I said, fanfic for a long time, and then I tried original fiction, and this was back in, let's see, I wrote this in 2012, I think. And at that point, it was like just the beginning of the boom of ebook and digital publishers. And so a lot of them would put out calls for submissions. And that was before I had an agent. And Karina Press put out a call for submission for something, I think. I can't remember what it was. But I submitted it and I got an offer for publication. And that was my first piece of original fiction. It was a novella called Plus One, which is now available, like through, I own the rights to that now. It's reverted to me. And I wanted to see like what I could do. And it was so funny because after I wrote fanfic, like I tried to get as far from the fanfic characters as I could. So I made a blonde hero and like he was younger and he was sort of I don't want to say beta, but definitely not like an alpha hero. And the heroine, like I was so paranoid that people would think that it was like I just wanted to spread my wings a little bit more. And I think that's funny because now like all of my heroes are dark-haired. And scruffy and basically resemble my husband because I do have a type. But after I did that, I did another novella for Karina. That was another call for submission. And then I tried my hand at a full-length novel, and that is Caged in Winter. And that one, that was a whirlwind process for me. That was I wrote it in June of 2013. I pitched it to agents in July of 2013 at RWA. I then had requests for it from a couple. I sent it to multiple agents. I had four offers in September, and we sold it to Berkeley in October. So it was just boom, 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 one thing right after another. And it was exciting. Yeah, that was exciting. And I just really loved, I never went back to fanfic. But it is, I do go back to read it. But now it is super fun to explore my own characters, and I love coming up with characters and creating them from nothing. Whereas, with fanfic, you've got this like safety net sort of where the readers can intuit a lot of what the author maybe doesn't say or maybe doesn't know yet to say. And so there is like a safety harness there. And going away from that is scary and challenging, but I like it because it's challenging. And like I said, I get to play with like messy characters that maybe don't exist or didn't exist for me in my fanfic. So
So when you're writing, are you a pantser or are you a planner?
I'm definitely a planner. I am. So the last four books that I've written, I think I finally found my way. So I have written just on my own 27 books, and then I have written 11 with a co-author. So, nearing 40 books, and through all of those, only the last four have I settled on a process because I don't know if Gallup's strengths, but I am high strategic, which means I am always looking for the silver bullet. I'm always looking for the fastest, easiest, most efficient way to do something. And so until I found that, I was like, oh, well, maybe if I change this little thing, it will help me. But this latest effort of how I've been writing is I still go through in depth with my characters. So I figure out their Myers-Briggs, their Enneagram, their Clifton strengths, their astrology big three.
So
Is
you
that?
get in like a really detailed like
Yes.
character piece for them before you even start writing the book.
Yes, I do, absolutely. And then once I have those and I know like how they go together, then I'm able to figure out I do like a short outline for the entire thing. And I sort of move those around. So I will either use note cards or cut, print it out and cut it out on paper, and then just sort of move things around intuitively on where I think maybe more emotional growth needs to happen, or they need more conflict here, or I need to break this up with something with the family or whatever it may be. And then I go back through and I expand on that outline, and then I go back through and I expand on that even more until I have a pretty solid outline of about 25,000 words. And in that outline, it might just be like a detailed accounting of this happens and then this happens and then this happens, or it might be, 1,000 words of dialogue that just sort of comes to me as I'm plotting it out. And then once I have that, then I go in and I start from chapter one and I quote unquote write the book then. So I take my maybe it's 500 words or 1,000 words of that chapter, and then I just expand on it if I need to. I'm filling in the interiority, I'm filling in emotions, I'm filling in, all the movements and choreography and all of that stuff that needs to happen. And then I get a fully fleshed novel when I'm all done with it.
That's so I tell every author this when I do these interviews. This is one of my favorite parts of these interviews because every author, the finished product is a book. But the way that these auth like every author gets from point A to point B is so different. And like your process, I don't know of anybody who's using that process. But I think
Yeah,
it's so
unique, I
fascinating.
guess. Everybody's is unique to them. It's like if you even saying, plotter or a pantser or a planter or however you get to it, like those people don't ever do those things the same way. What might be a pantser to one person might be, oh gosh, that's actually a plotter, or that's not pantsing. That's just having absolutely no idea what you're doing, or
Well,
you know what I
and
mean?
even the way this, that people get ideas too, because we were doing an interview with J.R. Ward and she was talking about how she like basically sees everything in picture and that's how she puts it on the page. And Delta James was telling us like how the characters like talk to her and like that she just puts on the page what they're telling her. So it's just so different. And I think it's just so fascinating and wonderful that like there, I mean, it's an art form. Like writing is an art and it's one of those things where everybody's craft is different, but the finished product is still there.
Exactly.
So when you're writing, is there anything that helps you stay focused?
I have ADHD, newly diagnosed. So Vyvanse. And also if I, so usually I have a Zoom room, with, there are five of us, I think, who come in and out daily, and so we do sprints in there, and having that accountability is really important for me. And also just sort of knowing like usually the deadline. I have a book due July 1st, and I am just doing the character stuff now. So the deadline definitely makes it so that I have to stay focused.
I like a deadline.
I mean, I do too, but boy, my body doesn't like
I need a deadline because if you honestly, if you're like you have time to do this, I will take all that time to do that. I mean, even if I have the deadline, I still take that time to do that, but
Me too.
I
Me
get
too.
it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's rough. It's It's rough. I'm working on that. I'm trying to grow out of that.
Yeah, I
it
don't think
hasn't
that's
been going
happening.
great. It really has though affected me physically, like literally in my body. I have developed an autoimmune condition
Oh,
because of the
jeez.
stress that that deadline's put on. I've had multiple surgeries because of overworking. Like my last one was for my ulnar nerve, which it's kicking up a little bit today. So it's because I was working so much on the character stuff. But yeah, I've had to adjust and do a lot of dictation and adjust my process to be kinder to my body. So new writers, if you are listening to this, take the breaks, stretch. Remember stretching with your friend. Dictate if you can.
So you're a big fan of the small town and the family series. What draws you to those?
I'm probably drawn to a small town because I've never lived in a truly small town. I say that as someone who's lived in, like, I would call them medium-sized towns. People who are from Chicago, or New York, like originally, are probably like, that's not a medium-sized city. That's a tiny little town. But I grew up in South Dakota, and the town there was, I think about 125,000 people. Like, we had everything that we needed in that place. We had a mall, we had multiple movie theaters, we had multiple Targets, we had, everything there. Our nearest big city was Minneapolis, which is 4 hours away. And now I live in a town that's about 150,000 people. That's directly in between Chicago and Milwaukee. So I know, like, okay, it's big, but not big. But I do like the, I don't know, I just like the fairy tale of it a little bit. Like, I love Stars Hollow. If you like, I hope readers get that sense when they read Starlight Cove that it is like Stars Hollow, the sense that it is the town itself is almost like a character. And I don't know, I like writing a lot of times. I like writing things that in the way that I wish that they were rather than the way that they are. So we know that in the real world, small towns can be full of bigots and racists and all the yucky people that I don't really surround myself with and would like the world to be different. And so in my small towns, I get to write it how I wish that they would be. So it's a little bit, of
Almost
course, I can't think of the
fantastical.
word. Yeah, it's a little bit, not rewarding, but you get to create something, you get to build something, that you wish existed in the real world and live through it with characters. So
See, I myself have never lived anywhere but a small town.
okay.
So, like where I grew up, and so we mowed 15 acres. And like
Okay.
the closest grocery store that was an actual, like the closest Walmart, or we have Giant Eagles here. It was about 20 minutes away. So like if you had to get gas, you got gas before like on your way home, because if you got home and you needed gas, like you had to take a different, like if you were on E, you had to take a different car to go get a thing of gas. And like I, 'cause I grew up in the middle of nowhere, like, and now I live in a small town, and so like my local Target is like 20 minutes away instead of maybe it's like 15, but like the population of my borough is like 2,000 people.
It really was. So when I was first writing, when I first went into small town, that was my Haven Brook series that starts with Charmer. And My bestie lives in a small town in Mississippi, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna set a book there so I can come visit you. Like, that was my entire thought process around it. And so I did. I went to visit her there and see like life in a small town, and I got to talk to the people there, and I got to talk about, you know, the things that they wish weren't in a small town, or the things that they wish, like, not necessarily for convenience, but more idealistically, if that makes sense. And you know, see like what's it like when you go to the grocery store and you see people that you know literally every time you go to the grocery store. And you know, what's not just that, but like, what does a school look like in a town this size? And you know, what does the community feel like, and all of that? So it really was, it was nice to get that and have that sense without living there. Like, on one hand, I think, oh, I would really love to live in a small town, just because I think it would be quaint and lovely and things like that. But I do like having an Aldi, 5 minutes from my house.
I
And
mean, I have an Aldi 5 minutes from
do
my
you?
house now. It
That's
has
amazing.
now. I have lived in the area I'm in now for 19 years, and it took 18 years for the Aldi to come in, the 5 minutes
Hey, you
away.
just needed to stick it out for a
But
while.
honestly, it's amazing.
I know, isn't Aldi's the
It
best? I'm
really
telling you,
is.
I love it. You know, I do like the conveniences, and also where we are now, I love being able to drive 45 minutes in either direction and get to pretty much anything that I could possibly want. You know, I can go to the ballet. If I go 45 minutes north to Milwaukee, I can go to a ballet. If I go, even though we're equal distance between both, like, it takes longer to get to Chicago, obviously.
Well, because Chicago traffic is insane.
Yes, exactly. It's a nightmare, and getting around down there is a nightmare for me. So it's just easier and preferable to go to Milwaukee. So that's usually where we go. But having that ability is great. But also, I could drive, you know, 20 minutes in another direction and get to a town that only has 5,000 people in it. So there are a lot of those, you know, around here. But yeah, I'll just live out in my fictional world.
I mean, you do what you have to do. So let's talk roommate rules. So this is the book four, The Steel Brothers of Starlight
I
Cove.
frozen, or have you frozen?
Your video, if you turn your video off, that might help.
Leah.
Yes. Oh, there we are. That was weird.
Okay, you froze on my screen and I didn't hear anything.
Well, and you froze on mine and I wasn't hearing anything. And then, like,
Oh
my
my gosh.
Zoom shut off and I was like, oh.
You are the second person that that has happened to that I've been talking to.
Huh, that's weird.
Where their Zoom just it froze and then Zoom shut off and shut down, and yeah.
And then magically reappear. I
Yes.
mean, it says we're still recording, so everything's
Okay,
still good to go.
I hope you got all that.
I'm sure that I have because honestly, like mine, sometimes it'll shut down and then I have to switch to my phone and it still like gets everything.
It's so okay, good.
But we'll just keep on going.
Okay.
So let's talk the roommate rule. So this is book four of the Steel Brothers of Starlight Cove. It came out May 7th, 2026. It is small town, enemies to lovers. In a family series. And this is the story of Declan and Penelope. And Declan, he lives to annoy Penelope.
He sure does. He
So
sure does.
what was the inspiration for Declan's picking, so to speak?
You know, I don't even know. I don't even remember how I got to that, but I think when I was building them up. You know, they had come in earlier books just a little bit here and there. And so I knew that there was something there. I knew that there was some sort of a an abrasive relationship between them. And I didn't know why. Like, I didn't know what it was specifically. And so I was exploring that, like figuring out, okay, well, how can I go down this quote unquote enemies to lovers vibe? And just to be clear for everybody listening, my enemies to lovers don't want to stab each other. They just
I mean,
really
she kind
get
of wants to
irritated with
stab
each other.
him,
She
but
kind of does want to stab him. That's fair. That's fair. But I was thinking, like, okay, how could I make them antagonistic towards each other? And in what way would that present itself? And then when I realized that Penelope is a major rule follower and Declan is a major rule breaker, it made sense that he would needle her because he's an immature man child who pokes for attention, which of course now he knows better than to do that, you know, growth. But basically it's let me see how fired up she can be. And I think a little bit of his reasoning behind that is, you know, when he's firing her up, she is being the truest version of herself with him. And I think he sees that or saw it. Because with everybody else, she's performing a little bit. She's trying to be, you know, perfect in every way. And with Declan, something there, you know, she cracks that perfect mold. And I think it's his way of trying to make her feel safe to do that. But exploring how they would have that friction and how it would present is basically how I got to the picking and poking.
Well, and as we learn more about Declan and we get more of his story, and I mean, we've met him in the previous books because I mean, he is part of the family, and Penelope, like you said, like she's been in and out, and we've gotten more of him just because it's such a family-centric series. But he is like the one who he does kind of pick at everybody, though. Like he is not quite the rebel he pretends to be, but he is at the same time. So it's like he wants to like make people frustrated, but it's like that's like his love language.
And I think that is a little bit of him testing people. So I'm going to talk about strength again. Apologies for anybody who doesn't know what this is. Are you familiar with strengths?
I'm not.
Not at all. Okay.
No, so I
So,
am very much excited to be educated about
okay,
this.
okay. So strength, Gallup strengths is a personality test, not unlike Myers-Briggs or Enneagram. It's just more in depth. And the idea is that every single person is made up of 37 different personality traits. And those traits work in conjunction with each other. So while we might have the same top three strengths, if they are in a different order and also the subsequent strengths behind it will make them present in a different way for each of us. So it basically comes out to play in different ways for different people. And Declan is a high relater, and a relater is someone who is very selective about the people that they allow in their inner circle, and they knowingly or usually unknowingly put the people that they meet and the people in their lives through mini tests. And those tests tell them subconsciously if that is a safe person to have in their circle. And so while Declan is picking at all of these people, he is subconsciously or consciously, probably subconsciously, testing them and seeing how they react and seeing, you know, if they are still a safe space for him, if he can be himself with them, if there's room for that. And then he is slotting them into his life in an appropriate space, to allow him to still keep his safety net.
Well, and when
No,
we
he is also a high relator, but in a different way.
well, and when we learn about
She tests people, but she does it in a different way, you know, to make
well,
sure that she can be herself.
and that's something too, like they have some parallels in the way
Yes,
in
they
their
do.
upbringings, like, 'cause we have learned throughout the series, so this is not a spoiler, if but like Declan's dad left when he was young. And so, like, in Penelope, she grew up in the foster, or she didn't grow up in the foster system. Her a cousin raised her because her mom passed away when she was younger. So it's like a lot of the parallels are like people who care about them leave and they don't, which Declan, like, yes, it's his dad, but like that was such a big part of like who he was up until that age. And so it was like a huge thing for him. And I mean, it's affected all of the kids in like different ways, and they've all dealt with it differently, and it's and it just goes to show the same act can happen to seven different people and everybody deals with it differently. But so I think that is a big part of the story too. It's like who's going to stick around for both of them.
Absolutely, 100%. That is the test that they are putting everybody through. And with Declan, like, you're right. They both were, for lack of a better word, abandoned by their parents at an early age. Declan's by choice and Penelope's by circumstance. And you know, how they come out of that, it affects them as adults. And it is really interesting as an author to explore that. If anybody has read any number of my books, it's pretty clear that I don't usually write well-rounded familial relationships. Like, the parental relationships are usually challenging in some way, and that's for a couple of reasons. One, I think it is interesting to explore it. It gives my characters more depth. And also, it allows for bigger wounds for these characters, because we don't want perfect characters coming in. We want somebody who has some work to do. Because otherwise, you know, you're just reading about two perfect, super hot people,
And
like,
that's kind of
kiss and
boring.
then the end. Right. And it's like, okay, well, I mean, that's fine if that's what you want to read. But I do like to, you know, have them work through some of this hardcore stuff, because it also helps, I think, people work through that too. And it helps me work through things on the page that maybe are tangentially related to some of this stuff. And that's always nice too. My therapist thanks myself for that.
Well, and in the in your series though, like especially these last two, like the core family is very tight knit, like, and they're very close with you with each other. With, I mean, there are things like that are frustrating, like to each of the characters, and like some of them hide things and things like that, which, I mean, that's bound to happen with any family, truly. But I think that's one thing I really enjoy about your series is the fact that, like, yes, like the upbringing is not ideal in any means, but like that they have really come together as siblings and are there for each other and protect each other. And they fight, they bicker, they get on each other's nerves. They like they have
They're
little
real siblings.
they're yes, that's the thing. Like they're very real. There's falling outs, there's coming back togethers, but they at the end of the day, there's full support, which I think is great.
It's that, you know, I can pick on my sibling, but if anybody else does, hold my earrings. Like, you know, I can tell her she's stupid, but if you tell her she's stupid,
That's a
you
whole
know, I'm gonna
nother
throw
ball game
hands.
there,
Right.
yeah.
Yeah. I do love exploring that. And I also really loved, so with OG Starlight Cove, it was a reader gave this synopsis of it. Five men, brothers with BDE, and a tyrant of a baby sister
Oh yeah, she
running the
definitely is a
show.
tyrant.
And like the idea with that series was I wanted to see what it would be like with five like overbearing, over the top men and their baby sister and play with that sort of dynamic. And I really loved it. Like I really, really loved working on each of them and Addison growing into herself and how each of the brothers saw her and sort of a little bit took for granted that relationship, but just seeing them how they orbited her. And then when I moved to the Steele Brothers, I wanted to have that same feel, but in a different way. I knew I only wanted to do four brothers, and so I gave them a single mom. And they still, of course, brothers and a sister is different than boys and their mom, but it still is, this mom, this gentle soul who's not at all like Addison, but it, is basically the anti-person to all of these men that she birthed, and I just love exploring that, seeing these men be, big, strong, tough guys, but
But
really
the
soft
biggest
for their
mama
mom
boys in
or
the
their,
world.
yes, or their sister, and of course their heroines too, but I loved playing with that sort of juxtaposition in the characters. It's really fun.
Well, and Holly, who is the mom of the Steels, like she's such a strong character. And but she's also like, but she's not so closed off as you would think that she is. Like, she's like, this was a decision that like my husband at the time made, and I am not allowing that to happen. And I like she didn't let it define who she is. And like, you see that in her interactions. And even there's one point in this story, because Declan like talks about how he was felt like he had such a great connection with his dad, and how like she's like, you're not him and you will never be him. And it's like, because the whole idea of staying is like a big theme throughout the story. And it's just, I really loved Holly's characters through these books, because like she supports but doesn't overtake, which can happen sometimes, like when you have like the parental unit coming into the story, and it's like she's telling them what to do, but she's just more giving advice.
Yeah, I think she learned a lot. I mean, she's the mom of a 40, lesbian, I think 42-year-old, down to however young, let's see, Lincoln is maybe 34, 35. Am I frozen again?
You are, but it's okay. Your voice is working fine.
No.
I think Zoom is glitching tonight, because I've never had it happen more than once.
My goodness.
But it keeps coming back and it keeps
Yes.
recording. So Zoom is hating
Okay.
us tonight, but we're okay. So Holly, let's continue there.
Okay. Yes. Holly. Okay. Now I'm trying to remember where I was in, this is my ADHD where I can't remember. With how she has grown as a mom, right? She's the mother of, adult children. And so I like to think, I'm not the mom I was when my kids were little. My
Oh, yeah.
oldest will be 22 in a couple months. And I've learned like what you need, when you need to step in and when you need to step back. And I just tried to times that to the X power, whatever, for however many longer, however many more years that Hollywood had been. And, I also really wanted to give them one as close to perfect parent as I could, because they had, they had to deal with the dad. Holly is definitely not perfect. She gets on the boys' nerves. She, is headstrong, in a soft sort of way. Like, she thinks that she can do everything. And part of that is, I think her boys forget she was a single mom, for a long time. And so she did some shit on her own. And I think, her level of parenting is just, like, knowing just the right amount, to push. But I also get to push really hard with Mabel, which is lovely,
I
because
love
Mabel gets to
Mabel.
be like my quote unquote bad guy. I love
Mabel
her
is.
too. She's
Mabel marches
like
to
my
her
favorite.
own drum. She does what she
Yes, she does.
wants. She is the
Yes, she does. That's
instigator of a lot of things in this book, which I loved. Like, she is the reason they become roommates and why
Yep.
they are forced to live together. And I think it's fantastic.
It was so, like, I hope that when people go into this, that they, so I am the kind of romance reader who, if you tell me, if I go into a marriage of convenience and they say, you have to marry her, otherwise this goat dies, I will be like, yes, I buy that. Let's get married. So there are just certain things, like when there's only one bed. Yeah, totally plausible that there, of all the hotels, there are only one bed at any of these. So obviously, like, would this ever happen in a real small town where a horny old woman is deputized by the town sheriff, and so that she can hand out 30-day living situations or 500 hours of community service? Of course not. Of course not. And that's what makes it funny.
But
Like,
it does in this fictional town that I've created and make me all
exactly,
make my
exactly,
rules.
exactly. She actually was the instigator in the other roommates to lovers in OG Starlight Cove, which happens to take place in the same apartment. So that was Rebel Heart with Levi and Harper. And the way that happened is, it's actually owned by Mabel, and when Levi signed his lease, he didn't read it correctly, and he's actually only renting a single room in this apartment, and the whole apartment belongs to her. So it was just, it's fun ways to find her unique opportunities to meddle. And I just sort of like this, like, almost, I don't want to say witchy, but almost uncanny prediction
Well,
that
it's
people are
like she
going to be
knows
perfect matchmakers.
who is like who
Yes.
needs to be together. Like
Who is destined to be together?
she's like sees their auras and is like,
Yes,
these two auras
exactly.
need to meld together, and I am going to do what
Exactly.
I have to do to make it happen. Because Levi and Harper, they
Yes.
were second chance too. It's
Yes,
like,
they were second
and so it's
chance.
just like she
And
knew that those
yes.
two, like if they ever got back in the same space, like it was gonna happen. She just
Yep.
had to make it happen.
Yep. And I love that she's like, she is, can be the voice of reason. She can be that motherly touch when needed. She was that for Quinn in Fearless Heart. But she also is, the push that
She's a
these
wild
kids
card.
sometimes need. She is a wild card. She actually is very, very loosely based on my grandma, who is a 92-year-old Spitfire. My grandma does not sell sex toys. She is not as free sexually as Mabel is, although she has told me before, I wish this was dirtier. True story. Oh, I don't see what the big deal. Your grandpa and I did all of this,
And
which
you're
is
like,
lovely to hear.
that is things that I did not need to know.
Absolutely,
You're
that's
like,
way more
good for you,
information than
but
I needed.
please
Yeah,
never say those in my
never
presence
again.
ever
I don't want
again.
to hear that again. But it is very much like just that sort of love for life is how my grandma is. And I love that I have immortalized that on the page and that so many readers have really come to love her. Like, she is probably the single most popular character I get requests for a book for
Oh, I'm not
is Neil.
surprised because, I mean, as an avid reader, I always love like that older, like meddling grandparent or meddling like town person. Like, because there's just something about like that age demographic who like meddles that it just, because at that point, like they don't give a fuck like for about
No,
anything. Like they have
I
lived their
don't.
life, they are content, and they're like, well, I'm gonna make everybody around me do what I want.
Yes, and I think, I think there's something that we can learn from that. Like, don't waste
Yeah.
half your life or more than half your life worrying about what everybody else thinks. Just do what makes you happy.
Yeah.
Just do what makes you smile.
So what's next for you?
What's next? Well, I think probably I can spoil this. At the end of the book, we have a surprise. We have a surprise fifth book in the series
We
that
do.
I wasn't expecting. And I will tell the story eventually on how that came to be, but that is what I'm working on right now is book five in
Yeah, I was when that
Steel Brothers.
happened, I was like, oh my. But
Oh
also
my.
like but like it makes sense at the same time.
Yes, exactly. Because I mean, Stan was Stan, and that was well established in the book. And it just sort of really, I had a reader put a earworm in my head that just would not die. And it exploded into this book. And so I've got this planned, and I have my next series planned already. I just booked narrators for that. The audio, so I'm an audiobook girly. I listen 100% to audiobooks. Even if I'm reading an ebook, I'm having it read to me. Hashtag ADHD. So I have to have it, otherwise I get distracted and I go out on a tangent. So audiobooks are really important to me, that I want to make sure that they're produced. And I'm also a snob with audiobooks. So I want the narrative. Basically, I'm selfish. I produce these because I want the audiobooks of them, and I want them done by my favorite narrators. So that's what I do. But you do have to book them out really, really far in
Yes,
advance.
because they are very, very busy, especially if
Oh my
they're
gosh.
popular.
Yes. One of them actually, my one of my very, very favorite narrators was not available for this at the date, so I had to rearrange things to make it work in a way that will work for this. And it's still going to be great, but yeah, it does. It takes a long time, and that's a lot of pressure, to figure out like what am I going to be working on in 2 years? I don't know. That's a lot, but I will say, let's see. I don't want to give too much away. I will say that there is going to be a title reveal coming very soon that should give you a hint of one of the tropes. When will this release?
I have no idea because we have the way the schedule is, it's basically a hit or miss if like when I get things out. So we
Gotcha,
will
gotcha,
just keep
gotcha.
everything vague and
Okay.
everybody has to just look forward to all the announcements
Okay.
coming.
Okay. Perfect.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on this quick shot of author spotlightness, and I appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. This is a lot of fun.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.